You're listening to Oral Arguments.
You may be seated. The next case set for oral argument is Harlan Kerwin versus City of Deadwood. Kimberly Pearson is here on behalf of the appellants, Kerwins et al., and Quentin Riggins is appearing on behalf of the City of Deadwood. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and then Ms. Pearson, you'll have a five-minute rebuttal. You'll get a two-minute warning light when you get to the end of your argument. So, Ms. Pearson, you may proceed with your initial argument.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kim Pearson. I represent the appellants Harlan Kerwin and Pandora's Box LLC, doing business as Gunslinger Saloon. The circuit court's decision affirming the denial of certificate of appropriateness by the Deadwood Historic District Commission was erroneous. The court improperly stated and applied the substantial evidence standard. The historic district's stated reason for denial of the certificate of appropriateness was that the exterior alteration proposed is incongruous with the historical, architectural, archaeological, or cultural aspects of the district. Substantial evidence does not support this stated reason for denial.
Is that the correct standard of review, the one you just stated, or should it be reviewed under a clear error? I saw both referenced in your brief.
Well, it's slightly unclear because it depends on whether or not the Administrative Procedure Act applies. Some case law indicates that it does. Some case law says that it does not because it's a city.
What do you think about that? Is this Historic District Commission an agency or not?
Pursuant to statute, it is not an agency, but the only appellate procedure that seems to make sense in a case such as this is the appellate procedure outlined in the Administrative Procedure Act rather than regular civil appellate procedure. So it should apply, the appellate Administrative Procedure Act should apply to at least the appellate procedure.
Kind of borrowing from the APA for a standard of review.
Borrowing
the APA's standard of review under 126.36, even though it might not actually apply?
Yes.
How does that, in practical reality, change our review, clear error versus substantial evidence? And let me just tell you my thought, and then you can respond to that. You know, so clear error, we review, we have a whole record, we look at the entire record. Is there evidence to support this, or is it clearly erroneous under that review of the entire record? That's a little easier to do with an administrative agency where you have a transcript, either an electronic transcript or a court reporter. A lot of these commission meetings, you don't have that same type of a record. You have bits and pieces, which is kind of what we have here. Mm-hmm. And how do you review that for clear error versus substantial evidence to say, substantial evidence says, hey, there's some evidence to support what they did here. We're going to affirm. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, that does make it difficult because, as you mentioned, there is not a court reporter, and the transcript, like the transcript in this case, doesn't even indicate who was talking all of the time. The record that was put together by the City of Deadwood, the city didn't believe the Administrative Procedure Act applied, and therefore the record that was put together for the court to review was not entirely, wasn't everything that could have been presented. There weren't minutes from the meeting, for example. So there is definitely an issue with whether clear error would apply or substantial evidence. The more, in MG Oil versus City of Rapid City, they applied the substantial evidence standard to the review of that city council's decision. And that was fairly recently, within the last 10 or 15 years. One of the issues here is that you're reviewing the decision of the circuit court, which was the appellate court here. And the appellate court, as the circuit court, misstated what substantial evidence is.
But why would that matter if that's not the correct standard of review? And we can apply, in the current posture, the correct standard of review if we determined it to be clear error. There's no, I mean, it seems like the having an intermediate level of appellate review doesn't require us to defer or anything like that to the intermediate court, or I wouldn't think it would. Maybe you would disagree.
No, I believe you are correct, Your Honor.
So couldn't we just apply the correct standard of review sitting where we are as the second appellate stage of appellate review?
I believe you could. It would probably, this case would probably have to be remanded because for the circuit court to apply that standard, because that hasn't been argued or articulated by either of the parties in this case.
But do we, I mean, in this type of a proceeding, go ahead, counsel.
The stated reason for denial in this case was not based upon the city ordinance that Deadwood has. It was based upon this incongruous language, which comes out of a state statute. However, the city has never said that that's where the language is coming from. The historic preservation officer in this case applied or instructed the Historic District Commission to apply criteria from the Department of Interior rather than from their own city ordinance. So any standard that was applied or any criteria that was applied by the city was not the city, the was not out of their own city ordinance of 17.68050.
Though the report that's referenced as the staff report may not cite the ordinance, it seemed like the preliminary portion of that report contemplated the application of the 17.68050 ordinance. And I agree that the regs are, the Department of Interior regs are referenced as well, but would you agree with me that there's an earlier portion, I'm trying to find it in my notes, there's an earlier portion of that report that it seems to contemplate the ordinance for this historic district review?
The first two statements of the report relate to historic features and discuss the history of the building itself, and the second one articulated it relates to the architecture, and that is the only portion of that report that discusses something that might be construed as part of the city ordinance.
What fundamental differences do you think exist, if there are any, between the considerations that are listed in the ordinance versus the considerations that are listed in the Department of Interior regulations? Because if that's the assignment of error that you're suggesting, I think the next question might be, okay, if that was erroneous, how did it impact or did it impact the result? How were they different? Was there something that was fundamentally, off the table in terms of what this commission should have been considering, but they considered anyway?
Well, the wording of the two is quite different. The city ordinance states that they shall apply those criteria as well as establish design review guidelines. It's unclear to me from the statute if the criteria is the established design review guidelines or something else, but the error really comes because they're applying something that isn't what they're told to apply in their own city ordinance, and then that the decision is based upon some other language that isn't in either the city ordinance or in the Department of Interior regulations. So the decision that was stated has no bearing on the application of any criteria. The Department of Interior criteria, there are a number that the historic preservation officer discussed and said did not apply that may not really be in the city ordinance criteria. So because the language of the two are so different, it's a little hard to compare them without taking a deep dive into that issue. And I don't have, let me grab the Department of Interior regulation.
That's okay. You don't want to, if you don't know off the top of your head, I don't want to make you do that.
Well, I didn't even grab the right thing.
No, could I ask you a different question, maybe?
Yes.
And if you wouldn't mind, I'd be grateful if you could move on to the argument that you have about the similar criticism about these factors. And as I understand the argument, your view is that the commission was obligated to consider each of them without exception, so they couldn't leave any off. Could you describe that argument, perhaps?
Yes. The ordinance says that the eight factors shall be considered, and as well as the additional two exterior alteration factors. The eight factors described in 1768050 paragraph A are conjoined with the word and, so it's in the conjunctive, which, as we know from statutory construction, shall means that you must consider, it's mandatory, and is conjunctive, so they must all be considered. It's much like sentencing with in a criminal case. A judge has to consider certain things. Even if those don't apply, the judge still considers them and then moves on to the next thing. And that's how we know whether or not someone has considered something. We can't jump into their head and know whether or not a factor was considered unless it is articulated, and even if it's not relevant or not applicable to the situation, they can move on to the next.
What about the factors that might not apply? What purpose is served from considering those factors if they don't apply?
Then we know that the city has considered them and has actually abided by their statute.
So then in your view, would your view of relief be that we reverse and send this back ultimately to the commission for them to make findings on factors that maybe all of us agree probably don't apply to this project?
Well, our request is that the court would reverse and grant the certificate of appropriateness, but I know that this court is probably more likely to remand it back. And in the end, we may have the same result, but the importance is the process, that the process here worked correctly, and that there's trust in the system that the city is doing their job as they're supposed to, and they're considering the appropriate criteria, and they're following their ordinance, rather than looking at criteria that aren't in their ordinance and stating a reason that has nothing to do with either their ordinance or the Department of Interior guidelines. The other issue that the city did not address is what to do when the Historic District Commission has made a decision to deny a certificate of appropriateness, which is found in SDCL 119B49. That tells the city that the Historic District Commission shall place upon the records the reasons for such determination and shall forthwith notify the applicant of the determination, furnishing the applicant with an attested copy of its reasons, therefore, and any recommendations that it has. The reasons here were nothing more than conclusory, and so the reasons were not stated on the record and furnished to the applicant in any way that is particularly helpful. Moreover, the form letter that was sent to my client was not an attested copy, and the city has never discussed the fact that they didn't send an attested copy as required by statute.
What is the remedy for that then? Is it simply the same? Remand it back and have them provide a more detailed explanation?
It may be. Unfortunately, this court has heard many appeals from the city of Deadwood over the years, and the city has been instructed on how it should handle these types of meetings in Olson v. Deadwood in two different cases involving BY development. About every 10 years, we're back in front of this court saying the city of Deadwood didn't follow what they were supposed to do in a case, and everything just keeps getting remanded back, and nothing is ever, and here we are again. So remand may not fully solve the issue that seems to occur with Deadwood's repeated need to be in front of the Supreme Court. The last case that was here, BY Development in 2010, had almost the same issue as far as what criteria is being applied and how is an applicant supposed to know what criteria must be met in an application. And so we are asking for a reversal of the decision.
Thank you, Ms. Pearson.
May it please the court, counsel. At the outset, I believe that the issue that we must discuss is whether the Administrative Procedures Act applies to this particular case. And I believe for the reasons that were discussed with Ms. Pearson, it's clear that the standard that should be applied is the substantial evidence standard. And the reason for that is this court's precedent in both MG Oil and Olson versus City of Deadwood, cases that involved a city commission and a planning and zoning commission. In those particular cases, the court addressed some of the issues as to why substantial evidence was the standard, and we do have the concerns that this court identified in its questions for Ms. Pearson that we're dealing with a public body that doesn't have a court reporter or a transcript or a record like you would see in an administrative procedure situation. And so as a result, that's why this standard makes more sense for a historic preservation commission as well as a planning and zoning commission and a city.
Mr. Riggins, I'm looking for my notes. Like I was talking to Ms. Pearson, I couldn't find them right away. But my understanding was that Olson was a review involving a writ of certiorari. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
That seems like that's a very different type of administrative review than what we're dealing with here. And our cases on cert review suggest that, you know, as a consequence of statute more than anything else, that's rather narrow. Spearson has suggested that we should borrow the definition from the APA in Section 126.36, although perhaps it doesn't apply. We still need a standard of review somewhere. I'm wondering why it is you think that the cert review standard is preferable to the clear error standard.
The underlying facts of Olson were very similar to the present case. While it was a cert review, the facts were that the Planning and Zoning Commissioner transmitted a report similar to the one by Mr. Kuchenbecker, and that the discussion that was had relative to whether or not to grant the requested application in that case was very similar in factual nature.
But the entity matters, doesn't it? I thought that was the Deadwood Board of Adjustment that made that determination in Olson. And if that's the case, then we have cert review. Whether the facts seem a little bit similar or not, we have statutory authority that requires us to apply cert review. We have to apply it in those instances. I'm not aware of any similar statutory command that requires us to apply a cert review here.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. There's also no, as I understand it, statutory requirement that the Administrative Procedures Act apply either. So we are left trying to determine the standard here, which is why I believe the correct standard is the substantial evidence standard. With that being said, I do believe the evidence in this case supports the city's denial of the certificate of appropriateness. Specifically, while Ms. Pearson argues that the City of Deadwood did not follow the factors of its own ordinances, specifically 17.68.050, as well as the design standards for exterior alterations, 17.60.050C, the record that was transmitted to the Circuit Court shows that these these factors were indeed followed. In fact, the letter from Mr. Kuchenbecker, which ultimately was sent to Mr. Kerwin, which I do believe satisfies the requirements of SDCL 119B49, sets forth the exact same language that was ultimately used when the motion was made to deny the certificate of appropriateness. That language at CR 60, Mr. Kuchenbecker's letter, states that the exterior alteration proposed is incongruous with the historical, architectural, archaeological, or cultural aspects of the district. In this case, when one looks at the Deadwood Ordinance, the factors set forth in that denial all fall within the Deadwood Ordinances. For example, at 1768-050, the first two factors are the architectural design of the building, the second is the historical significance, and factor seven is the relationship between the changes and the surrounding buildings. So in other words, that deals with the historical, architectural aspects of the change, and it also deals with its relationship to other buildings within the historic district. So therefore, I do believe that Mr. Kuchenbecker's letter satisfies 119B49. In the Olson case, if it is controlling as determined by this court determined that findings of fact were not necessary. So based on that rationale, the fact that Mr. Kuchenbecker sent a letter to Mr. Kerwin following the denial articulating the reasons of 1768-50 that it was not consistent with the historical and architectural aspects of the building in relation to other buildings in the historic district is consistent with these factors. When one looks at 17.0 or 0.60.050C, the language in that particular ordinance states that the changes shall be comparable to the resource itself and the resources to which it is related, which is another way of saying that the requested changes must be congruous with the surrounding buildings from an architectural standpoint. So therefore, the question is whether or not the Historic District Commission considered evidence consistent with the historical architectural nature of the building. And the record, which was given to the circuit court, including briefing, establishes that these considerations were made. Mr. Kuchenbecker submitted a report to the commission, which it considered and was part of the packet given to each commissioner and part of the record in this case. That particular report noted that Mr. Kerwin's building sought to change the current facade to make it incompatible with the oldest known photographs of this building from 1913. The report also noted that the changes that Mr. Kerwin sought to make were to take that building back to a prior architectural period, a boomtown architecture that consisted of canvas buildings and rough sawn wood buildings. That architecture disappeared with the Great Fire in Deadwood, and consequently, when Mr. Kerwin's building was rebuilt and the buildings around it were rebuilt, it was built with a different form of architecture. Mr. Kuchenbecker's report and multiple commissioners noted that when they were looking at photographs of the building depicted a building very similar to the current facade at Kerwin's building, and that the proposed changes wanted to take it back in time to make it different than what it had ever been. It never had a facade, to the best of the knowledge available to the Historic District Commission, with that rough sawn siding. Thus, it is apparent that the Commission had reviewed the various factors of both 17.68.050 as well as the exterior alteration standards found at 17.60.50 and had determined, based upon its review of and these factors, that ultimately the proposal was not congruous with the surrounding buildings. In addition, there was discussion that the name of the block where the oldest buildings remained in Deadwood following the Great Fire, including Mr. Kerwin's building, was known as the Phoenix Block because it had arisen from the ashes following the Great Fire in Deadwood. So there was a discussion about how the proposed changes related specifically to the buildings which surrounded Mr. Kerwin's building. With respect to council's argument that the city is required to consider all factors of 17.68.050, I believe this reading is inconsistent with the practicality behind this ordinance. Specifically, if one looks at the first portion of 17.68.050, the ordinance states the Historic District and Historic Preservation Commission shall use the following criteria and established design review guidelines in granting or denying certificates of appropriateness. Following that discussion, eight specific factors are listed. To argue that a conjunctive and requires that all eight factors are considered is a bit odd in reviewing this ordinance, given that there's a conjunctive and in the first sentence as well, which states that the following criteria and established design review guidelines are considered. Yet the appellant makes no argument that the City of Deadwood failed to use established design review guidelines and instead only focuses on the eight factors. When reviewing these eight factors relative to a certificate of appropriateness, the City of Deadwood, through the Historic District Commission, is tasked with reviewing each certificate of appropriateness on a case-by-case basis. When reviewing each request for a certificate of appropriateness, they must consider the factors that apply to each situation. In this case, Mr. Kerwin did not seek to alter the size of his building. He did not seek to change the width or the height, which meant that that particular factor was inapplicable. And to suggest that this ordinance requires all of those factors to be considered would require the City of Deadwood, through the Historic District Commission, to undertake something that has no bearing on the ultimate result. A review of this ordinance makes it clear that the purpose of the use of the word shall was not to require all of these factors to be considered, but was instead to limit the consideration of the Historic District Commission to those factors. In other words, unlike a liquor license application, the City of Deadwood could not consider the applicant's criminal record, or unlike other instances, it could not consider the use from which the building was to be put. Instead, it was limited to the eight factors, as well as the exterior guidelines.
Was there any difference between the first application and the second application?
No. In fact...
I'm sorry, can I ask this one real quick? Sorry. To interrupt. And I'm not shopping for issues, but I'm just was kind of curious as to why, if it was denied the first time, and then it's the same application later. I know we're sort of in this maybe, it's APA, maybe it's not APA. Is there a reason why the city didn't argue that the initial determination had preclusive effect and was final because it wasn't appealed?
That's a good question, Your Honor. In this particular case, it was not appealed. Would it be considered final? That's a possibility. However, it was not argued by the city that it was a final decision after the first application. In fact, one of the keys to the reason why that was not argued was the fact that following the first denial, Mr. Kerwin sought out a meeting pursuant to Deadwood Municipal Ordinance in order to determine what could be done in order to find favor with respect to his request for a certificate of appropriateness. That leads to the argument counsel has made with respect to the circuit court's decision to admit the affidavit of Kevin Kuchenbecker. In determining whether substantial evidence exists, the reasonableness standard of Olson discusses whether or not the city followed its own ordinances. In this case, Mr. Kerwin argued on appeal that the city did not allow Mr. Kerwin a meeting with which to determine what could be done in order to find a method of getting a certificate of appropriateness approved. That meeting occurred, and the only reason Mr. Kuchenbecker's affidavit was placed into evidence was to clarify a misstatement of fact that no such meeting had occurred. The only other portions of this affidavit, other than that the meeting occurred, were portions that related specifically to the fact that at this meeting there was a discussion relative to what Mr. Kerwin could do in order to try to find approval with his certificate of appropriateness. So in this case, we have a situation where Mr. Kerwin made an application after he had made alterations to the exterior of his building without a certificate of appropriateness. He later went to the commission in an attempt to find favor and get that certificate approved. After it was denied for the same reasons that it was ultimately denied the second time, there was a meeting in which Mr. Kerwin was given options with which he could try to find an approval of the certificate of appropriateness. Following that meeting, he made the exact same application as the first one. And so the court had all of this in its record at the appellate level. And for these reasons, I believe there's sufficient evidence in this case, under either standard that the court were to adopt, that the circuit court had an adequate record to establish that the city of Deadwood followed its procedures and properly denied Mr. Kerwin's application. In the event that this court were to rule in Mr. Kerwin's favor, I believe the only option would be to remand this case, as I see no other case law from South Dakota that would substantiate any other result. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Riggins. Ms. Pearson, you can proceed with your 5-minute rebuttal.
Thank you. The city focuses on Olson, which, as well as MG Oil. The 2000 case of In Re BY Development, Inc. actually has more similarity to this case because that was an actual appeal from a decision of the the Historic Preservation Commission regarding the denial of a project approval. And in that case, the APA was used. They cited 12635 regarding addition to the record. But in that case, the Historic Preservation Commission prepared a written determination and provided the court with meaningful review. In that case, however, this court, rather than applying either the substantial evidence standard or the clear error standard, said, we review an agency's decisions the same as the circuit court, unaided by any presumption of the correctness of the circuit court's determination, and then discussed whether the question is one of law or fact, and obviously fact is law is de novo review. The issue before this court is related to how the city of Deadwood has operated their historic district commission. The city has decided that it doesn't matter if we call it the Historic Preservation Commission or Historic District Commission, they're interchangeable, even though they have different statutory guidelines. Deadwood's argument in this case kind of boils down to it's close enough for government work. But with power comes responsibility, and the Historic District Commission has the power to decide what an appellant can, or in this case, the appellant can do with his property, his historic building. And the power that the city has not been applied using the standards set forth in their own ordinance. As mentioned, the city cannot even decide which entity made the decision in this case. The criteria being applied is a moving target, and the language of the decision bears no relationship to city ordinance. The staff report, which told the commission what criteria to consider, did not use the city ordinance criteria. The close enough for government work is not acceptable because close enough isn't good enough. This arena of historic preservation can easily become subjective, which is why it is important to have objective criteria guide the way. And if remanded, while my client may not get the outcome that he wants in the end, the process does matter, as I mentioned. If the process is done correctly, there's trust in the system, and we can believe that a city is operating as they're supposed to, rather than applying arbitrary standards. Because it is important to not have an arbitrary decision in these types of cases, the decision should be based upon the criteria that the city is required to consider, rather than other criteria. And the decision stated should not simply be a conclusory statement that has no bearing to the criteria considered. And that needs to be understood by the city of Deadwood. Because this decision of the Historic District Commission was arbitrary and capricious for using for a stated reason that was not based upon the required criteria, and because it was made in violation of statutory provisions, the court should modify the decision pursuant to the Administrative Procedure Act Rule 1-26-36, so that the decision of the Circuit Court and the Historic District Commission is reversed, and appellants are requesting that this court grant the Certificate of Appropriateness. Are there any other questions?
Thank you, Ms. Pearson. I want to thank counsel for your arguments this morning. The case is now submitted, and that will conclude our oral arguments for this morning. Thank you.